Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good afternoon or good morning. I don't know which one it is, but it's 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, so I guess good morning would be appropriate. You're more than welcome to join us for the next 2 hours. This is a car show. This is a show about, I have this car, and this is what happened, or this is the code behind it. This is what the shop said. This is what the shop did. Tell me what you think. Should I have it fixed? Is this price appropriate? Is it in the reasonable range? All that kind of stuff. But what we're really good at is we're good about talking about symptoms. That's the most important part of the communication at the front counter, is the symptoms. Getting our customers to tell us what the symptoms are. And so many times it's the wife trying to regurgitate what the husband has told her. And so we have to call the husband to talk to him, or the other way around, we have to talk to the wife. So it's an important part of car repair. Successful car repairs is really communication. Nate from Strictly Diesel sitting here next to me. We've known one another for many years. He has a really, really good shop up in North Phoenix, I-17 and Pinnacle Peak. And do I have your line on?
I think you do, yeah.
Yeah? I'm just going to get you a little closer right here.
A little closer.
Okay.
There we go.
Good. How's business been for you?
Very good.
Good?
Very thankful, yeah.
And you're doing diesels, but you're doing Chevy, Ford, and Dodge.
Chevy, Ford, Dodge, Nissan. That's Cummins in there now.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, we're seeing those.
Okay. And so the Nissan flag doesn't bother you because what's underneath the hood is a Cummins, what you've already seen.
Exactly.
Okay,
yeah.
So it's the same.
It's the same.
Okay. That's kind of interesting. What about a Peugeot when somebody wants to bring in a Peugeot?
I'll politely decline.
Okay. We tell him our Peugeot guy's in jail and he's not expected out for another 5 years or something silly or stupid like that.
Yeah.
I don't know what the answer is, but it's a different ball game.
It's a for sure. Ball it game. Is for sure.
So anyway, the tough part about right now is that the pricing in parts is moving around a lot, and it pushes us into some kind of a corner where we might have to call or query electronically the parts inventory of different vendors, and we're seeing the difference, but we don't understand the difference. But for our business, for us, we're not moving around a lot unless there's a significant customer difference.
Right.
So if there's a small difference from one vendor to the other, I don't care. I'll just pick out whichever vendor's closer, faster, better. On the other hand, if there is a big difference, then I'll usually err on the side of the customer, for the customer. So I'll take a little less money on the markup as opposed to get a better part, or not a better part, but a cheaper part for the customer.
Right.
I think most everybody's doing that. I don't know anybody who doesn't.
Always looking for the best deal for the customer, but we want the best value too because we don't want to see the truck back. So,
And what part we pick to put on that car with the customer's help, of course, it really dictates what's going to happen when things crash.
Right.
Because it's our we pick the part.
Right.
And the difficult part to all of that is that sometimes that same part is made by 10 different manufacturers, and it can have different part numbers, but it's really the same part in a whole bunch of different boxes.
Right.
That happens all the time.
Yep.
So at that point, you don't know if you just bought a box that was the pricing, your cost was in the middle, when in reality, it's the cheapest part they make.
Right.
And so that's the difficult thing.
Yeah.
602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. You're welcome to join us if you'd like. All you have to do is give us a call, 602-508-0960. Blackwell Automotive is up close to you. He's on 40th Street and Greenway, so a little bit east and a little bit south of you.
Yep.
I went over to his shop the other day. He's been doing vintage cars for a very long time. And he does mothers and fathers cars, and he does motorhomes, and he does all the stuff that you and I both do. But he's getting into the vintage car stuff. And I was talking to him the other day, and the vintage car stuff, evidently, according to Tom, has to do with the diameter and thickness of the washer that we're going to use to put the fender on the car.
Okay.
I'm not quite sure I want a customer that's going to be measuring the diameter of a washer that I'm going to put on the car on the fender.
Yeah.
That's the hard part. And there are guys out there, and men and women alike, that are real specific. But I think what on the vintage side, and we were talking about this, Tom and I were, is the sin, the hard part is the guy wants a top 10 car restoration. but he doesn't want to pay for the top 10 car restoration.
Yep. Yep.
And if we're going to be micing out, and I use that as a silly example about micing the washers, but if we're going to mic washers for all the fender bolts that are, for all the fender bolts that we're going to use, somebody has to pay for that.
Right.
And how many boxes of washers are you likely to go to you get 12 that look the same? So when you start taking a micrometer that's measuring the thickness of a human hair at 2/1000ths of an inch, then where do we draw the line?
Right.
And that's the tough part. So I just said to him, I'll keep sending the vintage stuff to you because I have too many other issues going on here. Because Mike and fender washers isn't something I think I want to do.
Glad he's got time for that. So,
well, and he does. I ask him the same thing. He does vintage, but he does mother and father work, all the cars
sure.
that are at the mother and father's house, all the
sure.
kids' cars and all that kind of stuff. He said he had somebody bring in a John Deere lawnmower the other day. And I laughed at him, and I said, I have an old John Deere lawnmower. I told the guys, get it cleaned up, sharpen the blade, change the oil, and sell it, because we just put fake grass in the backyard of the house. So I said, I'm not going to need this. So they started up, and it blows smoke like you can't believe. I mean, it's like it's a fogger. It is. This thing is drinking oil. And
yeah.
they're all laughing at me and stuff. And I said, well, I know, but we still need to find out where the oil's coming from. And, oh, yeah, it's rings, and you know it's rings. I said, okay, we'll figure it out. So I get Eddie involved, and the head gasket had come apart.
Really?
Yeah. And so Eddie pulled the head on it, and he goes, look, the head gasket's coming apart. So he puts a head gasket on it, cleans everything up, looks. We roll the piston in and out of the cylinder. There's no scoring. The rings are fine. Everything looks good.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, everything is fine.
Wow.
So they started up. It no longer fogs mosquitoes for the 10-mile radius.
Yeah.
And I said, but please tell me you didn't put any 90-weight oil in the engine to control the oil consumption. And he laughed, and he goes, I used a straight 30-weight. And I said, okay, that's fine.
There you go.
So the difference between the 30-weight and the 90-weight is the difference between frosting and water. Good visual.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So if you're gonna, if you want your engine to drink a lot of oil, then you're gonna, a 0-20 would be a good place. Although we've had great luck with 0-20 synthetic in the passenger cars and light trucks. That's amazing.
That is amazing.
And when they're talking about 5,000 and 10,000 mile intervals with a 0-20, us old guys get kind of nervous about the 0 and the 20. It flows
right.
like a 0-weight when it's cold, flows like a 20-weight when it's hot. But in reality, we're not seeing the oil consumption issues. We're not seeing the smoke. We're not seeing nothing.
Rings have changed over the years.
The whole
valve
metal,
seals. Yep.
The whole metallurgical part of the engine
yep.
has changed.
Yep.
You're exactly right. You're exactly right. So anyway, Blackwell's at 40th and Greenway. He does family cars. He does motor homes. He does lawnmowers, and he does vintage work. Not necessarily in that order.
Right.
It depends on who's on the front counter. But if you get there and Polly helps you out, Polly's his wife, and she's the real boss anyway, so it doesn't really make any difference what Tom says. Just ask for Polly. So anything new on your end? Have you decided to change and make go a little left or go a little right? Any new equipment that you've purchased in a while?
We've got a CUDA now for Orson transmission cases and nasty stuff that makes life a little better.
If it's okay with you, can I have Andy call you? Because she was talking to me the other day about changing out our parts washer.
Sure.
And she wanted something different. Now, the parts washer we had is like 14 years old. We've rebuilt it so many times. It's also of the old technology.
Right.
And there's a lot of different things. Oil skimmers. Your new CUDA probably has
yep.
an oil skimmer
yep.
on it.
Yep.
So when you put the part in the parts washer, it's giant parts. It's a giant dishwasher.
It is.
And you're putting parts in there that are as big as kids.
Pretty much.
And so then it has all these wands that spin around, and it's real hot fluid, and it's lots of solvents and stuff like that. Then it's got a filtering system, and it's got a heater to heat up the fluid.
Yep. I put a couple cylinder heads in the other day, and they came out looking brand new.
Yeah.
Didn't have to touch them. So.
Okay, so let's the approximate cost of that machine was?
I thought it was around $7,000.
Okay, yeah. I was going to guess 7 to 10.
Yeah.
Because of the options, packages,
yep.
and stuff like that.
Yep.
Where we make money on that is just what you just described. Throw it in, wash it, paint it, put it back on.
Right.
And after we're going to do whatever work we're going to do, but if we're just going to take the heads off and clean them up, degrease them, and decarbonize them and put them right back on, that's the guy to help us do that.
Yep.
Saves us a lot of time.
Yep.
Plus, when the customer opens the hood of the truck, he sees the head, and he clearly knows that head has been scrubbed on.
Exactly.
But not by humans, so to speak, but by a machine that's pretty capable.
Yep. Absolutely.
So are you having a tough time painting? Are you going back with specific colors, or are you matching the block when you and the valve cover when you do the head? Because painting, we have that big argument all the time.
We don't do a whole lot with paint, honestly. It depends. Normally, if we're doing a motor or a head job, it'll go black, basic, and back together it goes. So
I think what we've all come to the conclusion is if we have to match a color, whether it's the block or the valve cover, we need to do that.
Yeah.
So I don't really want to paint the head red with a red valve cover on it, but we can shoot it aluminum, or if the block is black, we can go with black.
Sure.
But we just need to do somebody has to make a decision on what to do, because the worst case scenario is the guy with the Cummins comes back in and you painted it black because the block was black and he wanted it red like the valve cover.
Right.
Somebody has to paint that again.
Somebody. Yeah. Somebody. We try and pay attention to that too, but normally it's black for us. So.
Yeah. And that's the default. That's the default. I had one lady said, the only reason why you paint my valve covers black is because when they leak oil, they won't show. And I said, no, ma'am, I promise you, if valve covers are leaking, you're going to see the oil. Yeah. Guaranteed, you're going to see the oil.
No, definitely.
It'll be on the ground, and it'll be blue wisps of smoke at the crack of the hood because the oil's getting on the exhaust manifolds that are right below the gasket.
Exactly.
So I promise you, you'll know that if we didn't do a good job. But no, black is the
1 minute
color of the rest of your motor. So, and you know, I have found that the conversations like that with women is easy. And I think it's a common sense issue. I think it's not because it's bad guys or anything. I'm not insinuating that at all. I'm just surprised at the acceptance of even getting into a conversation like that with a lady.
Yeah.
And I'm also, I admire the fact that they're decision makers. Because you can have a guy at the front counter or a woman at the front counter, and they can't make up a decision. And then what do?
Yeah.
You end up making it for them.
Right.
And so, and then if your employees are too chicken to make a decision, then that's where, Nate, can you come to the front counter,
right?
Nate?
Right.
And then you get to make the decision.
Exactly.
That's what my kids do. Anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question or a car problem, we can handle diesels and gas. We can handle oil, tires, vehicle emissions, check engine lights, windshield wiper motors. And what happens if all of a sudden you're – oh, and the three different colors of diesel smoke, give them to me quick.
Black, gray, and white.
Okay. All right. And what those each ones mean if you're interested. 602-508-0960. 20 minutes after the hour at 10 o'clock. Nate from Strictly Diesel sitting here next to me. And my name is Mark Salem. I'm here every Saturday from 10 to 12 for 2 hours talking about car and car repairs and all that kind of stuff. You're welcome to join us. 602-508-0960. Phil, stand by because you're next. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Kurt's Auto Repair. He's up at I-17 in Bell. I've known Kurt for 20-plus years. Kurt and his staff and his wife and his daughter, I mean, this is a family operation, just as most of the shops that I talk to you about are. They're really good at what they do. They're really good and honest. And I can't tell you how many times I've sent someone to Kurt's and said, let him look at it to see if he agrees with the estimate you have and the diagnosis you had. How many times Kurt ends up being right. And he's right about the diagnosis, and he's right about the price, and the customer leaves there happy. And typically it's because it's a little less money than what they started off with. So Kurtz can do anything from an oil change to an engine swap, but if you live near I-17 and Bell and you don't have a shop, may I suggest the northeast corner of I-17 and Bell, Kurtz Automotive. Phil, thank you for holding. How can we help you?
Hey, Mark, love the show. You always amaze us. I've got a 2000 Pontiac Grand Prix GTP, and my son's driving it, and he goes, I heard a noise, and then it started to roar. And so now he sounds like the loudest hot rod in the whole neighborhood. So I did crawl underneath it and notice the pipe that goes into the engine area is disconnected. I can't tell if it was bolted in or welded in. What do I expect as far as a repair for something like that?
You know, it so much depends on which connection came apart. Was it from the manifold to what we call the A pipe, and then there's a B pipe, and then they can have a catalytic converter, and then they can have a muffler or a muffler first and the catalytic converter. So there's all this part of the exhaust. What part of town are you in?
We're up North Phoenix, pretty near Blackwell's, yeah.
Okay. Who would, do you have a muffler shop you used, Nate?
I used to have one at Cape
Never
Creek, but
okay.
Yeah, it's been a few years. So,
okay.
But I think they're still around.
Yeah. They're on Cave Creek. Do you
Cave
remember
Creek
the name
Road.
Of the shop?
South of Thunderbird. No, I don't remember
okay.
the name. So.
So Nate has experience with a muffler shop on Cave Creek Road, south of Thunderbird. And you can call Blackwell and ask him because he's up there at 40th and Greenway, and he's going to know somebody who. But Blackwell can also do the muffler work too.
Sure.
So he would. I mean, today we just buy pieces and just take off the old stuff and put the new stuff on. So yeah, you could take it by Blackwell's. I wouldn't go by Monday morning or Friday afternoon for obvious reasons, but just stop by or call and say, "Can I have somebody look at my exhaust leak and take the car?" That's what you could do.
Okay. It's okay to drive as long as to drive until it's fixed.
Here's the old day thought process. If you don't have full length pipe on it, then the cold air gets to the engine through the exhaust pipe much quicker than it otherwise would, and that could okay. cause some metallurgical problems with respect to warp or something like that. Now I want to tell you something. I've been around in the car repair business since 1968. I don't know that I've ever seen the results of something like that, but if you've broke off some portion of the exhaust and this thing sounds like it has no exhaust, then if you need it taken someplace, I'll bet you dollars to donuts your wife will not drive it.
She's afraid to start it.
Yeah, because of the noise. So anyway, well, yeah. that's why dads are dads. You and I have just decided we know who's going to take that to the garage.
All right, well, we sound like the fastest thing in the neighborhood right now, so it's kind of fun.
and you're right, If I were you, I'd find a Yogi Bear mask at Target and wear that when you're driving. And then the police
all
will
right,
stop
I'm
you.
All right, I'm on my
way. Yeah, okay, all right, thanks a lot, Phil. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We used to do a lot of muffler work. We don't do that anymore at all. There's too many really good guys out there. I like the independent. I don't like the chain stores. But I like the guys like Mesa Muffler. I had Perry, who's dead now, own Mesa Muffler, put exhaust on my 74 Chevy pickup. I graduated high school in 72.
Wow.
And he could weld backwards, forwards, left, right, in and out. And I mean to tell you, it sparks flying, and the welds look like a machine made them.
Yep.
And we still use Mesa Muffler and Mesa to this day.
Nice.
What's that, almost 50 years later.
That's incredible. Yeah,
so,
good stuff.
And, all right, we have another caller. Who might that be, Gil?
Say hello to Jack.
Jack, good morning. How can we help you?
Hey, how you doing? We graduated from high school the same year.
Oh, yeah, so we're the same age, aren't we?
Does your
wife still love you after all these years?
Oh yeah, we graduated. She graduated with me. We've known each other since junior high school.
Ah, that's good.
That's awesome. That's
a nice thing to hear. So, what's on your mind today?
Hey, you know, I've got an 08 Dodge Dakota with 110,000 miles, and you know, it's an 08. It's 13 years old. I was curious about Lucas Oil Products, you know, for oil, for your transmission, for your power steering, and okay. your oil. Do you think it's worthwhile, or do you think I'm just wasting my money?
Okay, let me. You want this?
No.
Okay, fine. That's fine. I'll take it.
I have comments, but yeah.
No, that's fine. That's what it's all
yeah.
about. We're not hiding anything here.
No.
Lucas, for me, was a product which was an STP competitor. And the Lucas, the Morey's oil additive or the Lucas additive was something that we poured into engines that were smoking like crazy that had bad rings and all that other kind of stuff. And we turned the oil from a 30 weight to a 60 weight or an 80 weight. Today, I'm going to change your question. Mark, do you have any additives that exist in your parts room? Yes. We have a power steering stop leak. We might have a small cooling system stop leak. We might have a treatment, a cleaner treatment for a transmission that's carboned up a lot real bad. We do have chemicals, but in my world, the use of them is sensitive to what we're trying to accomplish. So let me tell you what I've always said, and I always get in trouble saying this, so I'm not even going to ask you to say it. If you think by putting some fancy dancy liquid in the fuel, in the tank, in the engine, in the battery, in the cooling system, and your car's going to love you more and last longer, then I would very much like to sell you those liquids.
2 minutes.
Okay.
And really, there's nothing I put. You know, if I had an old truck and it was burning a little oil, I'd probably use that Lucas oil treatment because it's just as, like an STP. I would use that. But really and truly, if you don't overheat that 08 Dakota, if you don't run it low on oil, it'll last 300,000-400,000 miles easy.
Oh, geez,
that much, huh? Oh, I'm telling you right now, I've got all kinds of cars that are in the 300,000 to 500,000 mile range that haven't been opened up yet. And every
No, it runs real well. I don't have any issues with it, but I just wanted, you know, to treat it right.
Yeah, Nate, how many motors have you replaced or repaired that weren't damaged by the nut behind the wheel, as opposed to, they just gave up the ghost?
It's more about who's behind the wheel than it is giving up.
Okay.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
What I'm saying is that it's really an issue. When we have motor problems, it's typically not because the motor wore out. Somebody did something wrong. Somebody ignored the red oil light, red overheat light. They just kept driving and thinking, I'm only a mile from home. I'm going to make it home.
Right.
So I can't tell you the last time we replaced a motor that was just worn out.
Right. No, me neither. Yeah, that's been since high school probably.
So you would agree with me that 99 out of 100 motors that we replace have been damaged by the nut behind the wheel.
99 out of 100. I agree with that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does that, Jack, I'm not talking about your wife when I'm talking about this. I'm talking about you. But in your particular case, I wouldn't worry about it in the least bit. I would continue to drive it, and I think internal pressure causing oil leaks is the beginning of the end, and I think you'll agree with that.
Yeah.
Anyway, Jack, thank you very much for calling. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. There's five of them, 602-508-0960. Well, thank you very much for hanging on. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Nate from Strictly Diesel sitting here next to me, one of the best diesel guys for Chevy, Ford, Cummins. And what was the other one?
Nissan, which is Cummins.
Yeah. But what's kind of nice is when you have that broad base thing, then when you start talking Cummins, they pretty much, no matter what size they are, they're all kind of wheeled and work the same.
Absolutely.
And oil leaks are easy and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So anyway, Action Auto Repairs at I-17 in Deer Valley. I've known Tom since 1983. The shops that I refer you to, the shops that I tell you are good shops, are people that I have their cell phone number. I've talked to them. I know their families. I know their wives. They know mine. And I know that if I call them and ask them to pay particular attention to a particular problem, that they'll give you 100% of their time. In addition to that, what happens actually at the end of the dispute actually almost always makes the customer happy. Sometimes the customer is not always right. Sometimes the shop isn't always right. But between all of us, we put it together. But I haven't even had that at Action Auto Repair in a very long time. I think the last time we had an issue that we had to talk about it had to have been 10 years ago. So that's a pretty good record. Anyway, Action Auto Repair, I-17 in Deer Valley. Let's go to the phones, and we're going to go to Chuck. Thank you for holding through the break. Chuck, how can I help you?
Yeah, Mark, I just picked up a 98 Trans Am. And one of the headlights won't flip out, and I just wondered what could be the problem there.
Well, I think there's either going to be a vacuum operated motor that opens and closes the headlights, or an electric motor. I don't know, but
it's electric because I looked and the guy I bought it off of disconnected them both when they were, you know, the headlights are pointing out.
Okay.
So that you know, you have two headlights.
Okay.
You're saying something about an actuator.
Well, there's going to be an electric motor that's going to run a rod that opens and closes the door. And so, and when you turn your control, your headlight controls on, is going to make it. If you ask for parking brakes, it's not going to open up the headlights. But if you ask for headlights, it's going to open up the headlights. This really is on a, all right, here, Nate, on a 1 to 10 scale, the difficulty in diagnosing this, what would you think?
I'd say it's 2 or 3.
And I would too.
Yeah.
This is really not that big of a deal. Now, accessibility could change it and make it a 5 or a 6.
Sure.
Because now we have to pull the battery out, and we have to pull the canister out to get behind there to get to where we need to be.
Yep.
But as far as somebody diagnosing this and fixing it, I'm thinking that I'd worry about something much more important than this.
Okay. So it sounds like most of the problem or the expenses getting to it, not necessarily just changing the actuator or the motor.
Well, and see, you got a couple of things. You can have a bad ground. You can have a bad power supply. You can have those kinds of bad connections, and the actuator between the motor and the door could be broken, or the pivot on the door could be broken, or the motor's not working. It's getting its signal, but it's not working. Okay. So you got all those dynamics, but the diagnostic on this is a piece of cake.
Should be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
All righty.
All right. I have one other question.
Sure.
I've got an 07 Chevy Silverado, and I put all new shocks on it, and I even changed the springs on it. And when I go down the road, if I hit like two or three potholes in a row, it feels like I'm almost losing control of the car. And I thought it was shocks. Is there, what else could it be?
Well, is it something that you gave yourself?
No, it was like that before. When I put the new shocks and springs on, it's the same.
Okay. I think what you need to have is you need to teach somebody how to drive it and make it happen, and you need to be in another car, and you need to be circling that truck as it's making whatever noise or whatever bounce in it, and you need to figure out which corner it's on.
Oh, okay.
And that's one of the first things we do is assign two technicians. One of you take Mark's truck and follow you, and you go hit the railroad tracks at 37.5 miles an hour like the driver said, and then we're looking for what's going on underneath there. So
this could probably be found, too, by looking at the front end, looking at upper-lower control arms, what have you. You know, something's got to be loose. And for that matter, even a tire balance issue could cause this. So.
You're exactly right. Yeah. Putting it on an alignment rack and shaking down the front end would be the first thing to do, as long as he's got some knocking or some noise that is associated with loose upper control arms. Or
right.
A bunch of shims fell out of the upper control arms.
Yep.
So what part of town do you live in right now?
Northwest Phoenix.
Northwest Phoenix.
One.
Yeah, Happy Valley and the I-17.
Oh, okay. Well, you can go
up by Nate.
Yeah, you can go by Nate's. You can go by Action, or you can go by Kurt's. All any one of those guys can shake down the front end for you. I promise
you that.
Absolutely. Yeah, and then
one last question.
Okay, go ahead.
I put the tires that it calls for is 245 70 17s.
Okay.
And I put on the front of them, 245, 75, 17. Could that be an issue?
Well, during the alignment process, whoever's going to shake down and do the alignment on it can compensate for that, if they're even going to decide to compensate for that. But the real issue is, what's the diameter times pi is the circumference. And if there's a little difference in circumference between the two tires, and there might be a half an inch of width, it's not anything. If I was going to align it, and I love to align cars, I wouldn't be bothered by that at all. And that's not going to be part of your problem either. Is the steering wheel shaking left or right when you're acting, when this is going on?
No.
Does one corner of the truck shake? Is it the right front, right rear, or whatever?
You know, it feels like it's the whole front end that just is bouncing. I thought it was just bad shock.
Okay.
But it still bounces when you hit, like, not rumble strips, but I don't know, getting on the freeway sometime, the on-ramp has a few little potholes in it. They're only like an inch and a half deep. One of them it's fine, but if it hits like three or four at a time, it's just like the car just wants to skid out almost.
Okay. All right, well, that's not going to be too tough to figure out. You find a gray-haired guy that knows his way around an alignment rack, and that shouldn't be too hard. But anyway, thanks very much, Chuck. Thank you very much. Mike and Brian, stay right there. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, you guys are our first and second caller, I promise. Okie dokie. Nate from Strictly Diesel, Mark Salem right here on The Patriot, KKNT, every Saturday from 10 to 12. We're talking about car repair problems and stuff like that. And like we promised, we're going straight to Mike. Mike, how are you? How can we help you?
Doing good, Mark. Really love your show.
Thank you.
I have a 98 Jeep with a straight six, 97,000 miles. Friend said it's time to replace timing belt and the fuel injectors. What are your thoughts?
I think you're really late on that timing belt.
That motor had a timing belt?
Well, I'm assuming somebody looked at
it. Timing chain,
rather. Oh,
timing chain.
Timing chain, rather.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, if it's a chain, I'll tell you how easy it is to check to see what the chain looks like, is you pull the distributor cap off the distributor, and you put a breaker bar on the front of the engine, and you go up and down an inch or two, and you see if the movement of your crankshaft is mimicked by the rotor on the distributor. If there is no play, then Mark's not really going to care. And Mark's not going to be doing a timing chain on that either.
Okay, how long do you think they go? Any ideas?
Timing chain is the life of the vehicle, should be.
Most all of them are the life of the vehicle.
Yeah.
Now, what does happen sometimes is it'll have a rail that guides the chain or a tensioner, and that rail will break or the tensioner will go bad, but that typically comes with noise and other symptoms that the people would ignore.
Okay.
But I'll tell
that's
you.
That's good.
Let me answer you the question, though, for you real easy. If you got to go to the front of that motor for a water pump or a harmonic balancer or any kind of work on the front of that motor, then do the timing chain while you're there.
Yeah.
More than likely, that's going to happen in the next 50,000 miles anyway.
Okay, I appreciate that because I hear different stories. Brent says 100K, other people say, oh, they'll go a couple hundred. So, okay, now the injectors. Is it time to replace injectors?
When they're bad, don't mess with them. Don't flush them. Don't put magic elephant urine that some guy is going to sell you to run through your injectors and your car is going to love you and all that kind of stuff. All of that is just flat out BS. If you've got an injector problem, you're going to know it. That's all. Change the question. Mark, what do you do on your injectors on your diesel? I don't know, 130,000 miles, I've never touched them. How about your wife's car? Is it fuel-injected gas? Yeah, have you ever done? No, heck no, yeah. I don't even like my wife. And then I'm going through this. We don't do fuel injection maintenance. If you got a misfire, we're going to go in there, and if you got a bad fuel injector, we're going to try to clean it, and if we can't, we'll put a new one in and send you on your way. So there is no time for fuel injectors. The first one will be the first time you look at them.
Okay,
all right.
I got you. Yeah, we don't use elephant stuff here. We just use camel stuff.
Well, you could do that. You must be a customer of Nate's.
No, we don't use camel stuff.
Yeah, he shows me buckets of camel stuff.
Buckets.
Okay.
Thanks, Mark. All right, you betcha. I want to meet the guy that collects it.
Right. Yeah.
I want to see what kind of a stud muffin he is.
Exactly.
To be holding the pail, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Is that a visual that you kind of just want to walk away from? Okay, Brian, how can we help you today, buddy?
Yeah, I use that all-inclusive camel type in my for an oil additive. Actually, I've got two oil questions. So
okay.
Seriously, here. The first one is, you know, the merchandiser, he sells synthetic oil under his business name up front, brand name,
mm-hmm.
or else you can buy the brand name. One of four refineries, as you've spoken about, that blend the oil that's probably two-thirds or whatever more expensive. So does the low-priced merchandiser oil, is it just as good
yes.
as a brand name synthetic?
Yes. And when you there's three kinds, conventional oil, semi-synthetic, and synthetic. And I must tell you that when I'm up in Payson and I don't have access to the inventory in Tempe, I oftentimes go to Walmart and I buy oil there because I'm okay with that. And usually I stick to a name brand. At the shop, we sell Chevron. And there, yep. I might pick up Mobil, I might pick up Castrol, I might pick up whatever. It doesn't really make any difference.
Are you as comfortable using the merchandiser brand as you are a name brand?
Oh, absolutely I am.
Okay.
Because there's only four companies that make oil, so they're going to go in 20 different bottles. And uh-huh. I really don't care. All the oils are good. Here's where there is a little bit of a difference. And when we get into the semi-synthetics, no one will ever tell you that it's a 50-50. 50% conventional and 50% synthetic, or if it's a 90-10. I'm bugged by that, but I'm not able to change the world. And if the Lord offered me a chance, it wouldn't be whether oil, a semi-synthetic, if I had those.
Yeah.
So from a real big point of view, now, the real hard part is what are you going to use in a car? Are you going to use a conventional with a 3,000 to 5,000 mile oil change, or are you going to go to a semi-synthetic that has a 5,000 to 7,500 oil change, or are you going to use a synthetic that goes from 7,500 to some of the Mercedes's that are 20 and 25,000 miles?
Yeah.
And the synthetic is a far premium oil, and frankly, I put a synthetic in my diesel, and I'm running it pretty hard, and I'm very protected. I feel very good. But the 0-20 in a synthetic in a diesel fluid fuel in a diesel application is just the perfect thing. It's just the perfect oil, and I'm real happy to tell you that I'm using a 0-20 synthetic in a Chevron 0-20 synthetic in my diesel, and I've got 130,000 miles, and I run an oil analysis every once in a while. I'm looking for growth of metal, of brass, of stainless steel. Never happens.
Nope.
Never happens.
The other question I had, Mark.
Go ahead.
Not to interrupt, but the other question I had was a friend of mine, without getting into a big, long story, he suspects he's got a quart or two of conventional oil mixed in with his synthetic oil in a 4.3-liter GM product, six-cylinder, and he's wondering if he should run it the duration of the 8 to 10,000 or whatever he's going to run it, or if he should drop it out and go ahead and put in new oil.
Okay, now I'm going to give you a visual because you're not in the studio. When you started talking about this, both of us are shaking our heads left and right, okay?
Yeah.
We're both shaking our heads left and right because he's all wound up. His underwears are tied up in a knot over because he screwed up and put a little oil in there of some other brand.
Yeah.
On his weight. Then when you get to the point about what are you going to do, we're both shaking our heads. Yes, like, forget it. Who cares?
Synthetic or conventional, it's not going to bother at all.
Well, the conventional stays on the right side of the motor. The full synthetic goes on the left.
I forgot about that.
You know,
thank
and,
you.
And sometimes they meet in the middle. It's
that
tough.
It makes no difference. The motor, it has a brain, but it controls fuel and spark. It has nothing to do with the oil.
Yeah.
And so,
well, I told him I'd call for him because he does have his pantyhose in a wad a little bit.
Okay. Well, then tell him that there's a special camel treatment that needs to be done.
Yeah.
and you handle that.
Okay, I got it covered, Mark. Thank you.
Okay, you betcha.
That's a good one.
You know, if it's going to be fun as long as Monday morning I don't get called to the office.
Right.
I don't understand how camel urine and a car repair show go together. And I'm going to say, am I here? And this is
breaking new ground today. We've done it, dude.
Here's the real beauty. He'll have to face me across his desk, Jim, the big shot,
right.
The big guy. And he can't keep a straight face.
Exactly.
When he's going to talk about camel urine, he's not going to be able to keep a straight face.
Yeah.
So he's going to call me in and sit down and say, is it true that you were talking about camel urine on your radio show this weekend? And I'll say, well, it's obvious you know it's true because I'm here.
Yeah, exactly.
So who do I need to apologize to? And that's when the grin comes up. You know what I mean?
Right.
So anyway, if I've offended you about talking about camel urine and oil, then I apologize. And if you want a sincere apology, then email me, mark@marksalem.com or nate@strictlydiesel.com, and we'll make it happen.
Yes.
Anyway, Brian, thank you for the oil questions. We have open lines available, and we're going to be here for another hour. So now's the time to stack up if you have a question or if you have a comment or if you want to open up a discussion, something, ask. And it starts with asking a specific question. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. 602 is Arizona, 508, and then 0960 is a play on from 960 The Patriot, which is where you found us on your AM dial. So if you want to do that, then we can do that, and we can help you out with those kinds of issues. And we don't have anybody lined up. But I want to tell you real quick about Auto Dynamics. They're up in Sun City. And Auto Dynamics, I've known Chuck since the 60s. So Chuck was owner of a gas station that I used to ride my bicycle to and air up my tires. And he always treated me with respect. Now, he owns a bunch of places in Sun City. But Auto Dynamics, the auto repair shop, is I believe to be the very best one in that area. So if you're looking for an auto repair shop and you're in the Sun City area, Mark Salem says, family owned and operated since 1982, Auto Dynamics is a place where you're going to find good staff, good technicians. They're not paid a commission or a percentage of your repair bill. They don't sell unnecessary parts, all that kind of stuff. He's on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. And we have a caller, and we'll take him right now, Gil.
Say hello to Terry.
Terry, good morning.
Good morning. I have a question in regards to, I just purchased a 2021 Dodge pickup truck, and I'm getting conflicted stories about run it synthetic and it's full synthetic because the service manager was saying that it froze code. Talked to a scheduler yesterday, and they're saying he's never had a problem with it. So it's conflicting. Do I run full synthetic, or do I run just conventional?
Okay, Nate.
And I had another question about what oil's in it right now.
It's going to be the cheapest oil of the vendor that filled the crankcases in wherever the truck was made. I can tell you that much. So no one knows the answer. But that should not be on your hard drive. Throw that away. Erase that. Who cares? Besides, Dodge has to warranty your motor for the first, 100,000 miles?
I think it's 100,000.
Yeah, 100,000 miles, so it doesn't make any difference.
Is this a diesel or gasoline?
Right. Gas. And it has the Hemi motor in it, but yeah. Okay. I just, and then the break-in period, you know, does it have like a break-in mode oil in it? Or I'm at about 980 miles right now, and I wanted to do an oil change at the first 1,200 miles just in case something in there was, you know, metal shavings.
Okay.
So I want to keep out.
Well, I want to take issue with that. We have a filter.
Okay.
And we're not going to be circulating big pieces of metal throughout the main bearings, cam bearings and stuff, because we have a filter.
Right.
So let's go back to the first question. What was the first question you asked me? You said that the service manager said something.
It said that the engine will throw codes if you run a full synthetic engine.
I've never heard that before in my life, and I don't believe that either. I don't believe that. Okay. I don't think there's a code. Is there an oil code that says I see camel urine inside the engine?
I don't think so.
Never seen that. Yeah, I've never seen anything like that at all.
Yeah.
So for that, I'm disagreeing with that. I'm saying I don't know what his background was. I don't know. Maybe he was maybe he packed groceries at a grocery store day before yesterday, and now he's a service manager. I don't buy the code thing. And as far as synthetic oil is concerned, it's the best oil by far. It's the best thing that you should have. That's all I put in my Dodge. That's all Nate puts in his Dodge. And there's nothing wrong with it, and it gives you a protection. The window on a conventional engine, I want you to put your hands up in front of you and put them about 8 inches apart. And the left hand is the low portion, the low temp range, and then the right hand is the high temp range. Well, synthetic opens that thing up really, really wide, and your engine isn't going to fail because the oil failed first. You're going to blow the motor up long before the oil gives the ghost up. So it's not an issue about throwing codes. I don't know why they do that, but I will say this, and I'll comment this, and I'll probably get in trouble, and I don't care. There are going to be some shops that are going to tell people not to use synthetics for a variety of stupid reasons because they only get to see that truck in once a year at 12,000 to 15,000 miles, and they would much rather put the scare of Jesus in them and tell them that they should really go back to conventional or a semi-synthetic so that they can see them at 5,000 miles on the low side of conventional, upwards to 7,500 miles on the high side of a semi-synthetic. So I think that there's some backroom negotiating going on because, really and truly, I would much rather see my customers every 6,000, 7,000, but with my synthetic customers out there that are running 10 and 15,000 miles, I'm just not going to see them, and it's just not my fault. And so those are the kinds of dynamics that's going on. A lot of what you're being told about your cars is self-serving to the shop. It's not really self-serving to anybody else. Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. We have 5 lines available. We've got Tom on one of them, and there's 4 open lines. You're welcome to join us at 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question or a car problem, or Nate from Strictly Diesel, and I like it when the husband says this and the wife says this, and they want us to just settle the dispute, I guess.
It's an entertaining day.
Yeah. That's a normal day at my ass. What the heck? So 602-508-0960. Let me just clear the air real quick. Tom, you stay right there. In our industry, we used to bring you in every 3,000 miles for an oil change, and we did virtually everything in the first 100,000 miles. So we changed all your fluids, your coolant, your differential, your transmission, what else am I missing in the fluid science?
Yeah,
all of it. And so we had a whole bunch of work we could do to your car. And again, we got to clip your hair in the old vernacular, clip your hair every 3,000 miles. And most of you didn't come in at 3,000 miles. So, you know, today it's different. What's going on right now is we have 15,000-mile oil change intervals, and we're not doing any of the fluids till 100,000 miles. That's going to create the opportunity for some people in the auto repair business to try to convince you that the rules have changed to your detriment. Nate, would you agree that the fluids we have today that go 100,000 miles are really the best we've ever seen?
I would agree with that statement, but it kind of boils down to you still got to take care of it. So
you're right.
Yeah. How do you treat the vehicle? What do you use it for? Is it a daily commuter? Do you tow with it? As long as you take care of it, it's going to take care of you, whether it's 50,000 miles or 20. So.
And you can abuse it no matter what oil's in it.
You can run
the EGTs up till you melt all the pistons. You can do all of that kind of stuff. But I think you'll agree that there is less chance. Well, no. There's going to be a lot less visits with the newer model vehicles over the last five, even some guys will argue 10 years, because we just don't have those stopping points we used to have.
Right.
And
sure.
So when we have guys say, don't use synthetic oils because sometimes it throws trouble codes, that bothers me. I don't like that.
Yeah.
It's not true. It's just not true. And if it was true, I would know it, you would know it, and so would half the guys in town that own shops.
Right.
So and then of course synthetic oil, if you're going to go on and do an oil change at 12,000 to 15,000 miles, it's your responsibility to check the oil every once in a while, because it's entirely possible that you're going to need a quart or maybe two in the 15,000 miles. Maybe newer model vehicles, probably not. I don't know about yours, but I don't ever add oil in mine on a 12,000 mile oil change.
No.
But how many quarts does your diesel hold?
Currently, the one I'm driving now is 15. So.
Okay. What's mine? My 12.
You're 12.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So it is something that's different, but folks, beware of the motivations of repair shops and car repair facilities when they ask you to deviate from the owner's manual, and almost always it benefits them and not you. And of course, but there's a lot of gray-haired guys that don't like synthetic transmission fluid, so they want to put the conventional in, but we can't let them go 100K with conventional. They got to come in at the 30.
Yeah.
And your transmission's probably not going to shift perfectly because it doesn't have the fluid it was designed for.
Exactly.
So those are the kind of things. Tom, how can we help you, buddy? Thank you for holding.
Yes, sir. Love your show.
Thank you. Thank you.
I have a 06 Duramax, and the brake pedal goes all the way to the floor. I actually bled all the brakes, and it worked for a little while, but it's still going all the way down to the floor. You think that could be a master cylinder?
Well, let me ask you a couple questions. Can you pump it up? If you pump it and then let go and count to two or three and then pump it and let go, can you change the pedal height?
Just a little bit, and then it will go all the way back down again.
Okay. When you pump it, and does the red brake light ever pop on the dashboard?
No, it doesn't. No.
Okay. I'm thinking it's got a master. I'm thinking out loud that the proportioning valve, if we had uneven pressure front to rear, we would have popped that valve and turned that red brake light on. But he hasn't.
Right.
So. There is a procedure, and we have sophisticated equipment where we can pressurize your brake system and we can flush it and do all that kind of stuff. I think the possibility, here's what I hear you saying. The pedal stops at different places at different times, the brake pedal. Is that right?
Correct, yeah.
Okay, then you have air in the system. That's all there is to it, right?
It sounds like air.
Yeah,
possibly a master cylinder, but sounds like air.
Now, you could have pushed the master cylinder in your braking bleeding application. You could have pushed the master cylinder cups into an area they've never been before, and in that area they've never been before is a whole lot of mud. And so you're bleeding the brakes, and what we try to do on vehicles is we try not to stroke it to all the way to the floor. So the guy underneath is going to say, pump it up, hold it. Nate says, I'm holding. I'm going to open the bleeder, and then Nate's going to go, okay, and I'm going to close it. I'm not going to let Nate's foot go all the way to the floor. And so that communication is between us. Now, he uses bad words and I don't. So that's the only, I'm giving you the verbatim. But in your particular case, if you wanted to do, I would start with the right rear and work towards the left front. And I would do a couple of, you know, is your wife helping you? Who's helping you pump? Who's helping you pump the brake?
No, it was a friend of mine.
Okay, so you don't want him to rapid pump the brake pedal. Push and hold. Tell me when it's firm. Count to five. Let the brake pedal come up. Count to five. Let us suck fluid into the master reservoir or from the reservoir into the master cylinder pump area. Pump it again. Do you feel it firm? Hold it there. I'm going to bleed. Everything's smooth. Everything's slow. No rapid pumping. And then when he feels the pedal move, he doesn't wait, you know, 1001, 1002. Okay, Nate, cut it off there. Thank you. And then we move from there. That's how we think you're going to get out of this mess you're in.
Okay. Okay. Appreciate that. One other question. I also have another Chevy Minimax that takes the depth fill. Nate, can I change for emissions? Can I put a catch can in there? Will it change emissions? I mean, will it affect anything on that?
Catch can for what?
For the depth fill, to eliminate putting the depth fill in the when I fill it up.
Unfortunately, we're stuck with the depth, so trying to change that or do anything with it is just going to cause you grief. So
it is. You're going to be sorry for messing with the diff.
Yeah.
Diesel exhaust fluid. Just quickly, and you correct me, because sometimes I don't get it exactly right. When it comes to diesel exhaust fluid, we have a particulate filter, and we're measuring pressure front and rear, and we're measuring temperature front and rear on most applications. I'm trying to cover everybody. What we're going to use the DEF to light the fire to burn the carbon up. So,
no, we're going to use diesel fuel to light it up.
There you go. Thank you very much. Yeah. We're going to use diesel fuel to light it up, and the purpose of it is to burn the carbon and send it out the tailpipe, and the DEF is going to be on the backside.
Yes.
And that's going to help the flame as well.
Well, it's not so much the flame, but it's changing what's coming out the tailpipe.
Okay.
We want more oxygen than anything, and that's what the DEF comes in.
Okay. So. But there's a heck of a fire going on.
There is a heck of a fire, for
there
sure.
Is.
Yeah.
And it's really unwise, and I can't speak for Nate, but I'm pretty sure I can. Neither one of us will mess with a DEF system. We won't do anything to take it out of service or anything. We do work on them, and they're not that hard to work on. And it's not that bad of an idea. It's no power. It's not a power loss.
No.
It's not costing you any fuel economy or power.
No.
Other than the fact that we are using some diesel fuel on the front side to get the fire really going.
Right.
But actually they do that in gasoline cars as well. So I don't know. Are you just unhappy with your DEF system, or are you boggled by all the different people talking about it?
Well, yeah, probably all the people talking about it.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, because they mentioned catch can, so I don't know what it relates to on that.
There's,
I think you're bypassing the depth part of it, I think, with the fluid part.
Yeah, I think that when you do that, you run a risk of tearing up your exhaust system and melting your system down and causing big problems, and wait till you have to buy everything from the engine back to the tailpipe. I mean, you're talking thousands of dollars. So I want to go over it one more time, though, for me. We're going to, the first portion of it is the catalytic converter.
Catalytic converter first.
Okay, CATS first. And so we're going to use raw diesel fuel to set that on fire.
Well, no, the diesel fuel goes through that.
Right.
When we get to the DOC or the DPF, whichever one's first.
Particulate filter.
Particulate filter. Some are different, but that's where the light off happens, is that collects the diesel fuel and it lights and burns off all the soot that's been built up inside that filter.
Minutes.
Okay.
So. Yeah, once it goes through those two items, then it hits the DEF doser or injector, if you will.
Uh-huh.
And the injector's there to help clean up temperatures and emissions after the fact. So
we're using fuel from the tank, and we're using DEF to help clean up what comes out of the tailpipe.
It's all about what comes out the tailpipe.
And really and truly, it can't possibly cost you any horsepower, because it's stuff that's happening after the engine. So, and the only time it will cause you is if we have a meltdown of the catalytic converter or if we have a meltdown of the particulate filter and we plug the exhaust and you run out of power. How often do you see that a year?
Twice.
That's same with us. Yeah. I was going to say the same thing. Maybe twice a year we see that. And it's almost always because of the nut behind the wheel did it. They didn't. They tried to drive it another 100 miles home with a big horse trailer or a bunch of hay on the back.
That's usually the case. It's.
And he ran the hell out of it and smoked the whole exhaust system.
Right.
And collapsed all the metal and melted everything.
Right.
So.
Right. Now, how accurate should I rely on the system when it says when it gets down to like 40% or when should I add depth? I mean. Is there a certain point? Can I let it get down to 10%? Is that okay?
Absolutely. You can add depth as little or as a lot as you want to. Typically on my truck, I added when it was a half a tank. So, you know, but it all depends on your comfort level and what you're going to do with the truck. If you're towing with it often, that's when it's going to use more. So, like, if you're ready to go from here to Flagstaff, I would probably fill it up just to make sure you don't go to 10% and then that shuts the truck down. So... They tend to get a little more upset when they're at the lower level with DEF, the truck. So keeping the tank on the fuller side, in my mind, is less hassle. So
it's no different than the gas tank in a car.
Exactly.
You just don't want to run off the bottom of the tank. So just, I mean, you know where the tank is at, the DEF tank is at. So if it were me, I don't have a DEF truck because I got a 12, so we didn't have DEF. But for me, I would have probably not let it get below a quarter. That would be out of my comfort zone. So right. I would want to work between a quarter and full and stay on the top side.
And for what it's worth, the gauges on those systems aren't necessarily the most accurate either. So, quarter tank is a good rule. So
it could be an eighth of a tank is what you're saying.
Yeah, it could be.
It could be an eighth of a tank. All righty. Well, good luck, Tom. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The phone lines are wide open. There's five of them. Nate from Strictly Diesel sitting here next to me. Between the two of us, we've probably got in excess of 50, 60 years of working on gas and diesel vehicles. And we're here to help you. And we don't have an agenda, so this is not like we're trying to get your business. We're trying to give you good advice. And part of that involves the communication between you and us. So what kind of car or truck you got, and tell me the argument you got with your wife or your husband or your brother in New Hampshire, and we'll go from there. 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. 20 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Every Saturday I'm here talking about car repair issues. And this weekend, it was my pleasure to bring, and he's still here, by the way, is Nate from Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. He's up at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. And he works on the Chevys, the Fords, and the Dodges. And I'm not going to ask him which one he works on the most and which one has the highest bill, because I already know it's Ford anyway. So nevertheless... I couldn't pass that up.
I couldn't pass that up.
So, and it's not true. I'm just teasing him. But anyway, yeah. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. Nick's a good guy. If you're up in the North Phoenix area and you need help with your diesel, then certainly they do service, repair, and parts on both foreign and domestic diesels. We have a full bank of lines. Let's go to Bob. Bob, you're first.
Morning, guys.
Morning.
My son has a 2014 GMC Sierra with the 5.3, you know, with the active fuel management.
Uh-huh.
And he hasn't had any problems. You know, he's got 113,000. You read, I know you see the internet always exaggerates everything, but everybody says you got to disable that, you know, active fuel management and stuff where it goes to four cylinders from eight, you know.
There's so much bad information. Yeah, there's just so much bad information in the internet. It's just hard to even comment on any of it. There's all kinds of people out there. There's these little hairy-chested guys that wouldn't know a piston from a C-clip of a wrist pin, and they're out there giving all kinds of advices. There's no checks and balances in the system. And so let me just change your question. Nate, does your wife by chance drive an active?
No, she does not.
Okay. If you had that, or if your daughter had it, or if your family had it, would you deactivate the active?
I would not.
I wouldn't either. There's so much risk associated with that. You start flooding the catalytic converter with raw fuel. You've got all these dynamics going on. And why wouldn't we exercise all the moving components of that system? And why wouldn't we benefit from the fuel economy savings and the least amount of air pollution?
for what it's worth, he's got a lot of miles on that motor already, so it sounds like he's got a good one. You know, most of the time I hear the mileage that those have issues, and he's well past that.
Oh,
so.
Well past it. Well
yeah,
past
so
it.
Whatever he's doing right.
And it's my experience and it's my opinion that the active management typically are going to need some work at 100,000-mile intervals, but let's not lose sight of that. That's four times around the equator.
Yeah.
Four times. You've driven the equator four times. Let's not lose sight of that. It's right. Not like Grandma Moses going between Prescott and the A.J. Bayless.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Anyway, Bob, we say...
I got one more question.
Go ahead.
Ask one more question?
Yep.
You know, the owner's manual doesn't say, but should you change the PCV valve, like, as a maintenance thing? Would you do that or just...
Both of us are shaking their head, yes. How often do you do yours?
60,000.
And I do mine, I think, every other oil change.
Oh, wow.
I do mine every... Oh, they're like, what, five
yeah.
bucks? You know,
yeah,
they're not
true.
Much money.
That's true.
And the PCV valve positive crankcase ventilator has a lot to do with how much pressure's inside the engine and how much we can vent, which eliminates oil leaks. Well, I'm a guy that hates oil leaks. So if the tailgate's got spots on it, Alan's going to be fired when I get back to work. I'm kidding.
Yeah.
But no, PCV valve, if it's not in your owner's manual, you can do every other oil change. You could do every third oil change. You could, there's a lot of different things you can do because the cost here is insignificant.
If you're one not to change the oil, then do it more often. But if you change your oil regularly, I would say that valve would stay cleaner and you should be fine for an extended interval.
But if it's peace of mind, how much can it be? It's less
exactly.
than $10.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Anyway, Bob, thanks very much. Sean, you're up next. Sean, how can we help you?
Hey, guys.
Hey.
My wife has a 2016 Toyota Camry, and she tells me that the alignment's off. So I drive it, and I'm like, no, it's fine. A few weeks go by, she's like, hey, that alignment's off. I drive it, no, it's fine. Finally, I drive it, and I'm like, hey, the alignment's off. So I got an intermittent alignment issue. It intermittently is pulling to the right. So I'm kind of educate me, if you can, on what some of the possibles are with this thing.
Did you happen to notice when it pulls right what the crown of the road was? And were you on a different road than what you normally were?
No, I tested all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
It's definitely... You know, resetting itself.
Are the wear patterns on both front tires good?
Yeah, they're brand new.
Okay, how about the old ones that were taken off? Did we have a little bit of outside edge wear on both front tires, which I would expect that we would, because the tire lays over when you turn right and rough?
I don't recall.
Okay, I can't answer your question because this is such a subjective thing. You're saying the alignment's off, but really. We would put it on the rack. We would check to see what the alignment readings are. We do what we call a caster swing. So we'd swing left and swing right, and we'd look to see if those two angles. We'd look at tire wear issues. We'd check wheel bearings. This is all part of an alignment check. But rarely do we have anything that comes and goes that isn't the hard part, and the hard part is usually found defective during the inspection that goes hand-in-hand with the alignment.
I would definitely have it inspected and look for
loose parts.
This
is one of those electric
parts.
Assist things.
Okay.
So it seems like seems like it's setting itself.
Well, now you just thrown in an electronic steering, and so now the question is it an alignment issue, Sean, or is it a steering issue, Sean? And what has to happen is somebody has to be in front of somebody who's worked on those and being able to answer questions, perhaps you or your wife or whoever the person that experiences it the most. Because if you have electronic steering and you have a problem at times where you don't have assist, that throws it out of the alignment arena in a heartbeat. So
it seems electronic because if you turn it off and restart it, then it's fine.
Okay, well, that's a reboot, and oftentimes I can't fix it over the radio. This is one of those things that you have to go in and look and see what kind of software it's got in it. Is there any updates for that steering? If they are the symptoms match the symptoms that you have on your plate? And is this new version 4.172 an appropriate one? And what's the downside? What
Two
are
minutes.
People reporting that this is not a good Because it happens a lot. We'll do a software update, and we're really sorry. And 99 times out of 100, you can't back up the software, the update you just did. So you have all those moving parts. So I think the best thing for you to do is have somebody shake down the front end, and let's make sure that we don't have anything mechanical that's disguised as some kind of an electronic steering. From there, then certainly I'd want to know what kind of version software we have in that electronic steering and see what's available. Got to run though, Sean. Thank you. Good luck to you. And that was a good question.
Yeah,
we haven't had one like that before. Steve, can we get the question real quick?
You sure can. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm a former 7.3 Power Stroke Ford guy.
I'm sorry.
And I currently have a 2012 6.7 Cummins and a Ram 3500 dually.
Okay.
And my thing is, on the Fords, I religiously ran, and I know Mark doesn't like to hear about the miracle juices, but I was very religious of running the appropriate amount of stanodyne through my Ford, and I've continued it with my Dodge, and my service manager, I live in Cave Creek, and I choose to drive to a Tempe shop, and Alan doesn't like stanodyne either, but I'm having a hard time of breaking myself. What do I do?
That's a great question.
Yeah, I am not an additive guy. I'm not an additive guy. I never have been an additive guy, and I'll tell you why. I have such a huge background in oils, and I have been trained, and I have certificates and stuff like that, and we can cause big problems. We'll be back right after this. Stay right there. We'll be back. You know, there's lots of second and third and fourth generation families running auto repair shops. And the only shop in Mesa that I can refer you to is Thompson's Auto Repair. First of all, Brian and Thelma come from the Vivian and the Thompson family, and they've been pouring gasoline and doing gas station work, and they had bays in the 50s, the 60s, and the 70s. They go back a long time. So Brian and Thelma were born and raised smelling gasoline at the dinner table. That's the way it is. So I would love to be able to tell you about two or three different shops geographically located throughout Mesa that really tickle my fancy, and that I could honestly say, hey, you can use them, they're good people, but I can't. I can tell you about Thompson's Auto Repair. He's on Main Street just east of Stapley, and I promise they'll treat you good. Steve, we've had the opportunity to argue this at the break, and I think it's fair to say that I'm a little to the left of you, you're a little to the right of me.
Sure.
But here's the question that I threw at my my best buddy here, Nate, is tell me the last time you spent money fixing a vehicle where Lubricity would have eliminated the problem.
That's hard to say. That's hard to answer.
Okay, and that's why I ask you.
Exactly. Well, you got to be like that. Anyway, you know, without having the injector sent out and studied and put under a microscope, it's hard to say which one would have benefited or not. Mm-hmm. Again, looking at mileage where we do these repairs, it's time for a set of injectors or a pump or whatever anyway. But
we don't have any science that says if you would have used a Lubricity additive that we would have added 25% to the life of your injectors and your pump. We don't have any of that.
Yeah.
And then I don't know what the cost associated of that with, or what kind of hard drive space it takes between my ears to be able to remember to put some Lubricity additive in it and all that kind of stuff. So I'm not a real fan. I remember Maury's oil additive?
Vaguely,
Which was like an STP?
Yeah.
We've had all kinds of tinkering of fluids for transmissions and power steerings. We had, you know, the power steering stop leak. You know what the power steering stop leak really was?
No.
Brake fluid.
Oh.
It swells rubber.
Sure.
That's it.
Yeah.
You could have done a tablespoon of brake fluid. So we don't do the Lubricity stuff, and I'm going to agree with Alan that I think it's a false sense of security. I think you think that if you put it in the tank, your truck's going to love you and never let you down. And I'm here to tell you, if you're driving a Ford, that chances of that happening are slim and none. But a Dodge, I would say differently.
Steve, for what it's worth, I used to be a stanodyne addict with my 7.3 as well. I've gone away from stanodyne over the years. I think they stayed in the 90s and everybody else went past them. My opinion.
Do you add a lubricity to
it? I do add a lubricity additive
What's
to my
brand?
Tank.
What's
it's a BG.
Okay, fair
Kens
enough.
Kens and Leslie's. There's also other additives that we have at the shop that are also available. I do not sell the Stanodyne currently. So, again, just...
I've also heard that any, it didn't matter if it's Kens oil or what, but I had heard that a half a quart of ATF in the tank would do similar things that the Stanodyne does.
ATF?
I just need to make one more comment.
Sure.
Concerning shops, if you don't mind, in my closing.
Okay.
My comment is, I live in Cave Creek. I have a comfort zone with a Tempe shop, and my service manager is Alan. I don't know if you want me to name shops, but the thing is with this shop, when they look at my truck and when it's in for a repair or if it's just an oil change, these guys will tell me and they evaluate the truck. Hey, Steve, we need to do this today. We need to do this in about 30 days, and this can wait about 10,000 miles. I'm sick and tired of the shops, whether it's my Dually, whether it's my wife's XLR Cadillac. I'm sick of the shops that give me a kitchen grocery list and make me feel that I can't drive the car off the service drive. And I thank my Tempe shop for that.
Well, thank you. And I wrote down all the time markers of this conversation, and I'll cut it out of the show and give it to him. He's talking about us, obviously, in Tempe. And here's why we do what we do is because of the damn tyrant that runs the company.
1 minute.
And makes sure that they understand that the customer's needs are in front of our own. And we're to give them the best advice. And if you're going to be selling Stanodyne lubricity fluid, you better have it in your truck, Alan. And you better have it, and I better see it. And the fact of the matter is we do what we do to your truck as we do to our own trucks. And so I'm up against a break. I got to run. But I understand what he's saying with respect to some comfort zone.
Absolutely.
And there's lots. And I'm just, for me, it's just not worth the aggravation. If I have to put a pump and an injectors on it at 180 or 200,000 miles, I'm okay with that.
Right.
I'm okay with that.
Absolutely.
I'll just do it and do it then and be done with it.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to try, and then I'm not going to feel really bad because I spent all this money on a lubricity additive for my fuel and then turn around and have the same problem and wonder how many of my extra miles did it give me? I don't like those kinds of things.
Right.
Stay right here, Nate. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. 43 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock, and I'm true to my word. I'm going straight to Bobby. Bobby, I'm sorry. I will take all the time with you I need. How can I help you?
I just wanted to add my 2 cents to the discussion on semi-synthetic oils.
Sure.
And I noticed they don't call it semi-synthetic anymore. They call it synthetic blend.
That's because they won't tell us if
means it's
go ahead.
It probably means it's not really semi-synthetic. I mean, semi by definition means half. But
I agree with you.
What's wrong with just mixing conventional oil with synthetic if you want a true, 50-50 mix if you want that true semi-synthetic?
Okay, that's a great question, and I have an answer for you. We have so many molecules of detergent and viscosity enhancers and oxidizers, and if you were to mix two of those, you would end up throwing the oil out of spec because you're actually mixing from two. I want to tell you, there's nothing on the semi-synthetic market that bothers me at all. I just wish they would let us know if it was really 50-50 or 90-10. The semi-synthetic is such a small window. It's between 5 and 7,500 miles. So, for instance, go ahead.
Have you noticed they do call it synthetic blend now?
Yes. Yeah, and that's a marketing strategy. But, again, they're not willing, prepared, they're not capable, and they're not willing to tell you what the blend is. So, in my shop, we're really tailing off a semi-synthetic. We're either going to put you in a conventional or we're going to put you in a synthetic oil. And we're going to skip middle oil for those reasons. It's difficult to explain, and the marketing guys for those major oil companies are not going to be forthcoming with information. So,
Oh, one other thing. I just had a little anecdote about an antique car show I went to.
Uh-huh.
I got thrown out, and I don't know why. It was an antique car show. I walked in, and all I said is, "Hey, fellas, what's new?"
You know, I got thrown out of a fair one time. You remember the guy that had the 6-cylinder engine and it was running and he grabbed all the spark plugs and killed the motor?
No, I don't remember that.
You ever see that?
No.
It's true.
Is it?
Yeah. What I didn't understand was is there was somebody over here with a foot pedal, and as soon as he started to touch the spark plugs, then he killed the motor himself.
I see.
But and I figured that out because I could see this harness was going someplace that was over there to a foot feed of his buddies.
Right.
So I got tossed out of the fair. But anyway, Bobby, thank you very much. Nick, how can I help you, buddy?
Hello.
Hi.
Oh, this is Nick.
Hi, Nick. This is Mark. Go right ahead, sir. Thank you for holding.
Hey, Mark. I have a 7.3, and the service engine soon light comes on every time the engine reaches normal operating temperature, which is somewhere between a quarter and a half on the gauge.
Okay, Nate.
What year is the 7.3?
It's an 01 on an F-350.
Okay. Do you notice any drivability symptoms when it does that? Does it run rough?
You can feel it kind of surge when the light comes on. There's a little surge.
Okay.
And it still runs good. Even with the service engine soon light, I can stick my foot in that thing. It takes off like a jackrabbit.
Okay.
So I don't know. So what causes that light to come on? Is it temperature? Is it something else? Is it maybe glow plugs or something like that?
No, glow plugs would be the instant you turn the key on, you should have a light at that point. It sounds to me like you have a high-pressure oil side issue, and the temperature of the oil or the viscosity it's running may tend to cause, well, not cause, but something's happening with the oil at a certain pressure and a certain temperature that causes the engine not to like it and throw a light at you.
Okay, because I recently put a new HPOP temperature sensor on it and also changed the water temperature sensor, and they're both the same sensor as far as I can tell.
Okay, but I want to ask a question. Okay, let me butt in for a minute. Why can't that thermostat? He said he's running a quarter to a half. Right. Why couldn't that thermostat be stuck wide open, and we're struggling with getting the motor up to operating temperature?
7.3 didn't care. So
it didn't care.
Didn't care. Now your coolant temperature sensor is only for the gauge on that truck. It does nothing for the computer. The oil temp sensor is very heavy in the drivability of that truck. So if it's seeing an oil temp issue, or if you have a frayed wire on the connector or something, that I could see definitely throwing a light at you.
Okay.
But being
so I could check the wiring on there and see if it's not connected or something.
Sure, sure. Did you put a Ford sensor on it, or was it something aftermarket?
It was not a Ford sensor.
Okay.
It was a Bendix or something like that. I can't remember.
Okay.
Some aftermarket one I bought on eBay.
Okay. Well, that may be your answer, too, for what it's worth. So.
Oh. Okay. Well, I've got an extra sensor. I could always swap that out.
Yes.
And while you're doing it and you have two of them in your hand, take your ohm meter and just kind of hit some of the terminals and just see what kind of resistance value you have with the two terminals.
Okay.
So terminal one to the housing of the switch, which is the ground, and then do the other side and just see if they're both the same, because the ambient temperature of both of them should pretty much be the same. But
yeah, as long as they're both the same temperature at the time.
Yeah, at the time. So, but you would, yeah.
Okay.
I think you're on the right track.
Well, one thing, too, that I forgot to mention is that when I bought the truck at an auction and it had an engine fire, and I replaced a lot of wiring and hoses and stuff like that. And maybe I missed a wire. Maybe it's cooked somehow, somewhere down the line.
That could be entirely possible.
Now, can we take our scanner and plug into this 7.3 and look at some of those parameters to see if all those signals are there? So approximately what does that cost?
Go ahead.
I actually have a scanner. I don't know if it works on the 7.3, but I have a pretty good scanner.
Okay, well, a scanner and a code reader and stuff like that we have scanners. We have proprietary equipment that we're going to plug in, and we're going to see numbers, and you have to know if the number's good You have to be smart enough to know if his number's good. So when you look at serial stream data, you better know what you're looking at to see good or bad. That's why I ask you, well, you could look at the serial stream data and tell quickly.
Yes. My next comment is, do you have anything that you could monitor this truck with to look at the engine oil temp? Because it'll be blatantly obvious if there's a problem with that sensor, you know.
Well, my scanner does show, you know, all the readings, you know, live readings on it.
Okay.
So if I know what to look for, I guess I could, I've got the book, I can look it up, I guess.
Well, shouldn't the oil and the cooling system be pretty close to one another?
Yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's your first parameter right there, and then air intake.
Oh.
You can certainly introduce air intake into that mix and determine what the air intake is. Is it really cold but everything else is hot, or is everything hot together?
Right.
So you have all those different parameters that are part of just understanding the serial stream data that you're collecting from your 7.3.
Definitely.
So is there any way I can... if I unplug the wire from the HPOP temperature sensor, is there some way to check the wiring by using my digital oil meter or something like that to see if it's connected to anything? So, I mean, is like one wire grounded and the other wire come from the computer or something like that?
You're going to have to get a wiring diagram to figure that out. And the answer is yes. You're going to do what we're going to do. We're going to go to the end of it, and we're going to work backwards and make sure that we have a solid connection all the way to where the bus connects to the PCM.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah.
So if it's not connected, then why does the light come on when it reaches operating temperature?
We can answer that question once we fix the truck.
I see.
And we can't answer it till we fix the truck.
Yeah.
I mean, that's part of the
part of
fixing it. So I got to run. But thank you, and I'm sorry, Bobby, but if you have a comment, go ahead and finish up, because I've got another minute or two that I got you.
The biggest key is looking at that sensor and seeing what happens at the temperature range you're describing. If it's at 100 degrees and it all of a sudden goes to 60, there's the problem. You know, there could also be an ICP sensor issue. That could be temperature related. Those things react at different times.
Describe ICP.
Injection control pressure.
Okay.
So it's looking at the HPOP pressure that runs the motor.
Yeah. Right.
Between this new sensor you put in and the ICP, that could be two of the problems or areas right there.
That you
where's the ICP sensor? Is it on the HPOP reservoir?
No, the sensor, if you go from that oil temp sensor to the right side of the motor on the front of the cylinder head there, looking at, so you put your right hand down, there's going to be a three-wire sensor right there in the front of the motor. That's your ICP sensor.
Oh. And if you go buy one, you'll know what it looks like. That's what we do.
Could that ICP sensor be the problem?
Could be the problem. Could absolutely.
Okay, because I haven't messed with that at all. So it's on the front of the right cylinder head, passenger side.
But knowing you got a couple things going on here, especially if you just put that sensor in and now you got this issue, I would start with that EOT sensor first and then go from there.
Right.
And off the top of your head, Nate, if this comes into the shop, where's the bid going to be on the diagnostic part? Because here's what we say. I don't know how long it's going to take me to find it. And there's a chance that I could fix it. It costs me $110 to get there and $10 to fix it, or $1,000 to fix it. So you just don't know. But it's
for us, it's $149 for normal diagnostics. If we find it and we can fix it for that, we'll do it. We have a $300 electrical charge. So in your case, you mentioned fire. You know, if there is wiring issues, we would let you know, hey, this is going to go to the extent of $300 because we got to access a harness. We got to put wire in there. We got to repair it, solder it, whatever we got to do. So that's the range you're looking at least.
Sounds good.
You know.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Nick. Thank you. And thank you for waiting as long as you did to talk to us. Nate, the hard part of the diagnostic is it seems to me that that's the one word I hear more every day than I've ever heard before. And it has to do with the number. And none of us, and I try to explain to people, you're asking me, how much is it going to cost you, how much are you going to charge me to build my swimming pool, but I don't know how big and how much rock and if you've got a gate and if I got to dig it by hand.
Yeah.
The problem with the diagnostic is we all have to guess at the number. Now, I'm going to tell you that we guess high. We just guess high because we'd rather come in low.
Absolutely.
So we're going to go a little higher than we normally would because we don't know. So it's no different than asking your doctor or your veterinarian a question that they can't answer. what's it going to take for you to tell me why my horse's foot hurts? It's going to take some x-rays, and it's going to take a physical examination, and we're going to do blood work, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do that.
Yeah, can't tell over the phone.
And it's not anything. Unless, of course, if I lift up his hoof and find out that somebody drove a 16-penny nail through his foot because they didn't have the right horseshoe nails, then I can fix that pretty quick.
Right.
But the diagnostic is a difficult thing, and it's not getting easier. It's getting worse.
Right.
And the problem I'm finding is that we're seeing some facilities, especially in the parts arena, that the code is directly related to the repair. So if you have an idle air control motor code, then they're going to sell you an idle air control motor. How often in your case is the code directly related to the sensor that it's pointing at?
Half, maybe.
Half. I would say the same thing.
Yeah.
Half the time.
Yeah.
It's a bad connection. It's a bad ground. There's a variety of reasons. Not too long ago, we had a coolant sensor problem, and he said, you know, we've replaced the coolant sensor. Well, we take the coolant sensor out of the hole, and there's so much rust and trash around it that the bulb part of the coolant sensor never touched the coolant inside the coolant jacket.
Right.
Holy, you know, how many people have been involved in this car?
Right.
How many people pulled the sensor out and looked inside? So the idea is, now what are you going to do? Well, you got to pull the intake off and clean out the backside of that hole and get that sensor to start talking.
Yep.
So it's a difficult thing. It's the diagnostic money is one of those things that wads up my underwear quite a bit because there's no real good answer.
2 minutes.
So there's some shops that are saying, hey, I'm just going to 250 and I'm going to be a hero almost every time.
Right.
Some of the guys are saying, no, I'm going to go to 300 or 350 and I'm going to be a bigger hero than you are. So I like the idea that we're going to bid high and come in low if that's what our staff ultimately does.
Right.
And they're supposed to do that. They're
supposed to.
Give the customer the benefit of the doubt and charge them the fair amount.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, we both of us know that our industry, there are people in our industry that can't be trusted with that responsibility. And we've seen them come and go.
Yep.
And we've seen and they've worked for us at times.
Yep.
And so we kind of know what they look like, they sound like, they talk like, they smell like, we know. So those are it. Nate at Strictly Diesel, certainly one of the, if not the most, let me just tell you this. When I have a diesel question, I call Nate. I have the accessibility to call lots of other diesel guys, but Nate, because he does the Duramax, does he does the Dodge, and does he does the Ford, and he goes back to the 7.3, my guy. I'm not quite sure he's going to take your calls, but he will probably answer some emails. So what's your email address?
Nate@strictlydiesel.com. Or if you call and leave a message, I will return it.
Okay. So. Those are the issues that that can help you out. But thank you for spending your Saturday with me. It's always a lot of fun to do a diesel show.
Yeah.
And you know why? Because I learned from you.
And I learned from you and a guest, so it's all good.
No, that's right. That's right. And we both have daughters that are in the business world, and they're both going taking slightly different things and stuff. I hope for you, and you hope for me, and we're hopefully maybe the girls will step up.
Exactly.
And and we'll see what happens. But
they do good.
Mark@MarkSalem.com. Mark@MarkSalem.com. Mark Salem is our website. You're welcome to stop there and visit. We're in Tempe, but the show isn't about my shop. It's about your car problems, and that's the reason the show's been around since 1988 in the Phoenix market. So Mark@MarkSalem.com. Thank you. God bless you, and wear your seatbelt, please.